Welcome, everyone, to the Million Vegan Grandmothers podcast. And today I have Anita Krines. And welcome, Anita.
Hi, nice to see you, Tammy.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here in Canada in my favorite part of my house, the kitchen, because I love inventing more and more amazing whole food vegan food. So spend a lot
I'm
of time.
Sprouting behind me. So
Oh,
I'm
love it.
in
What are
my
you
kitchen,
sprouting?
I'm in the sunroom, but I have sprouts. Yeah,
Oh, beautiful. What are you sprouting?
There's lentils.
Oh, lovely. It looks like a spicy lentil mix.
Sandwich booster. I'm sprouting these as well. Sandwich booster.
Oh, that looks beautiful. Where do you get your sprouts from?
I was in Montreal Vegan Fest and I got them. Yeah, they're just because they're not as sprouted yet, but they're just coming along. Oops.
Oh, beautiful. And those are little sprout jars, or did you invent them
I bought
yourself?
them from Montreal when I went to the Vegan Fest.
Great. I get mine from a place in Saskatchewan. They're called Mums, MUMMS. They're quite well-known sprouting place, and their website's sprouting.com, and they're an organic family that are growing these amazing, microgreens.
Awesome. What do you like sprouting? I just want to see what the company. This one's called.
One of the things I love the most is, beautiful.
So similar name,
Yeah.
ManoVerde.ca. That's their website, but I got that in Montreal.
Wow, beautiful. Well, if I'm just doing a jar sprouting, I like to teach people mung bean sprouting because it's so quick. It happens so quick. And my granddaughter says they taste like fresh peas out of the garden. And then I also order all my microgreens from them too. So my granddaughter's favorite is sunflower sprouts. We call them sunnies. And then also pea sprouts, microgreens. Yeah. So so they grow in soil and then the sprouts are jars. So yeah.
How fast are the mung beans?
Like 2 days they start to sprout after you've soaked them overnight, then rinse them that day, the next day, and then the next day you'll start to see the tiny little. And they taste so good. Yeah, I love
I'm gonna
that.
try that.
Yeah.
Do you have to get special mung beans or do you?
Sprouting mung beans. Yeah. I would
No,
get
you can't just get them at the organic. You can't just get organic mung beans. You have to
I
get
don't
special.
know how well they'll sprout, but I know that Mums ships all over to Canada and their website sprouting.com. And I think it's over $25 purchase. They ship for free. That's how it used to be. And they're just in Saskatchewan. So you could order from them and they would ship you some. And their stuff is so reliable. Like it just always sprouts. It's such a great product. And lovely family company. They have a lot of YouTube do-it-yourself videos also on their website. So yeah, it's a great website. And sprouting is such a great way to get living food into your body. And, if you have a limited amount of growth space. So thank you for mentioning that, Anita, because we just had a podcast with Helen Atherell. And she is just the goddess of veganic growing. And we learned a lot from her. So if our listeners haven't watched that podcast yet on Million Vegan Grandmothers, please do. It was very informative. And I think that Helen and Anita are going to be doing some work together on developing a way of, sorry, I just had something bang at my door. I was like, I hope that's not a bird flying around in spring. But yeah, I think you guys will be doing some work together on with plant-based treaty and veganic. So what was your phrase for veganic? Veganic is the real regenerative agriculture.
That's right. That's right. I think Ray Kowalczyk came up with that. And as soon as he said that, I said, wow, that's such a good idea. So I'm just, yeah.
So thank you, Anita. Anita, you started in Toronto on Toronto Pig Saves when you realized, what was going on in the food industry and animal agriculture. And then you went on to, you founded the Animal Save movement. And now you're full on with plant-based treaty. So, wow, you have a background in political science, I believe. And you come at it from many directions, but you are a go-getter. I noticed even in our last podcast how As soon as an idea sprouts for you, literally sprouts for you, you're gone with it. And you don't let a lot of moss grow under your feet when it comes to taking creative action in your processing. So thank you for that, because we need that. We need to be aware, feel the felt sense shock of what's happening, go into compassion, empathy, and move right into creative action.
Yes. I mean, I think it's because we have a lot of great team members, and it's easy to take action when you're in a community, as you know, with, you know, Salash Rao and your own, you know, the groups you're working with. It's just like, it's fun when you're in a community to take action.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how you got started and how your background and your education, I think you have a PhD in poli-sci, how that is being utilized so well right now in your work. It may not seem connected to some people, but it sure is.
Yeah. So I first went into astrophysics. I thought, oh, I'm going to be an astrophysicist, but the mathematics was so hard, I couldn't do it. So I went into peace and conflict studies for my bachelor's, and then I slowly got into the peace movement and environmental movement. But it took me a while to be an activist. My sister was an activist, no problem for me. It was like, oh, that's a big step. And then I went to Clackwood Sound. It's an old growth rainforest in British Columbia on Vancouver Island. And I went with my sister, and I was doing my master. I just finished my master's, and I was taking a year off and working I was a legislative assistant for Charles Katcha. He's a liberal. He was liberal MP. He was very environmental. He's very famous for being very strong. He used to be an environment minister under the Trudeau senior. Anyway, so I saw this on the front pages, like, oh, this peace camp. And I thought, oh, I'll go there for a day. But then I didn't leave. We didn't leave for 2 weeks. We stayed the whole time. And it was a vegetarian peace camp. And it was eco-feminist, and we got arrested. And my sister just thought, like, oh yeah, no big deal, I'll get arrested. Me, I was like shaking like a leaf. I was like so scared. And then when I got arrested, it was like, oh, that wasn't so bad. You know, it was like, you know, challenging authority just seemed like such a big thing to me. But then when you did it, it's like, oh, okay, I can do this. And then I went back in 97 and got arrested again for Great Bear Rainforest Campaign. And Sipora Berman figures in this, because she was the blockade leader in Clackwood Sound. So fast forward, I don't know, it's about 20 years. I called her and asked, how do we put food on the global agenda? And she showed us the fossil fuel treaty. And then we copied it and presented the plant-based treaty as an initiative of the SAFE movement. So it's all very connected. So the activism was always like, it wasn't easy at the beginning. I was scared. So like when I became a vegan once I was teaching at Queen's, because I was just a vegetarian then, and students challenged me as a hypocrite. So they said, like, oh, you got to read Gary Francione. And they were like really pushing me. And then I educated myself, and then I became a vegan in around 2005 when I was at Queen's, because thanks to the student group. And then 2006, I moved back to Toronto. I was taking care of my mom. And I moved near a slaughterhouse, a pig slaughterhouse. And again, I did nothing. I thought, oh, somebody should do something. Somebody should give out leaflets. I didn't even do that. It never occurred to me to go to the slaughterhouse and check it. My sister had been in that slaughterhouse years ago and was taking some footage, but didn't start a group or anything. Anyways, it never occurred to me. And then I adopted a dog 4 years later, and then walked on Lakeshore and we saw the pigs in the truck. That's so Mr. Bean sparked the movement. So yeah, it was a dog that sparked the movement for pigs. So yeah, that's how Toronto Pig Safe started. And then I used the education from, you know, Queen's University. They let me teach one course of my choice. The other ones were like Canadian politics and qualitative research methods and, you know, things like that. But they said, oh, one course you can choose. And then, so I taught a course on social movement strategies and tactics. And so every week, we would look at a different strategy, like community education, protest art, government and nonprofit partnerships, market pressure, things like that, like every direct action. Like, so every week was a different tactic or strategy. And so what we had learned from that course was that in order to start a movement, you got to do frequent direct actions. You can't just do something once a year or once a few months. So we did three vigils a week, every week.
Wow.
Even during Christmas, we never took a break, even during Christmas. all sorts of weather. We never canceled because it was extreme heat. We wanted to show, like, look how they're suffering. If it was extreme cold, we would show how they're suffering. Anyway, so then within 5 years, 35 groups formed. And then the pig trial happened when I was charged for giving water to thirsty pigs. And then at that point, we got a lot more recognition and things, and we got some resources for the first time. And we said, and so we used the resources to have organizing tours around the world. And Taddy's here just behind me here. Hey, Taddy, you want to say hi? So
Hey.
Taddy was on the organizing tours. She went to so many countries to start groups. Like, how many countries? Maybe you can just mention.
Hello. Oh.
Over 10 countries. Like, which ones? Like,
Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, Uruguay, Chile, Panama, Costa Rica, Guatemala.
and started groups in all those countries, which is hard to
Wow.
believe. Like,
Thank you.
I thought, like, Colombia, like, no, that's too hard, right? Like, I
Yeah.
thought Colombia, oh, there's violence there. How are you going to start it? Somehow, and you went to all these places, and so you and teams of people would go to different countries. And then we went from 35 groups in 5 years to 1,000 groups in the next 5 years because of the organizing tours.
Wow, and this was still Pig Saver. Had it moved to the Animal Save?
We called it Animal Save Movement as soon as there was
Okay.
more than one group. But thanks, Teddy. We're just doing podcast here with
Oh, awesome.
Tammy. So yeah.
Thank you.
So thanks. Cool. So yeah. So that then it grew to like 1,000 groups, and then we tried to pivot. So we thought, oh, there's so many reasons to go vegan. So we started a climate safe movement and health safe movement. But for climate safe movement, we didn't know what to do. We're just doing like film screenings and beach cleanups. And that's not enough to save the world. So that's hence the phone call to support Berman of the fossil fuel treaty.
So the fossil fuel treaty was kind of what you piggybacked on a little bit to start plant-based treaty. Is that
Big
correct?
time, big
Okay.
time. We completely copied it. We just looked at everything they had. We looked at their theory of change. Their theory of change is you collect endorsements from individuals, groups, businesses, and cities to create bottom-up pressure for a global treaty. So we did the exact same thing. So we collect endorsements. So we already have 150,000 individuals, including a beetle. Guess which beetle?
Paul.
Paul McCartney and his daughters, Stella and Mary. We have some Nobel laureates that signed. We have some, 150,000 people around the world. Then we have more than 3,000 businesses and groups in 27 cities, including one Canadian that just signed on, Rainbow Lake.
Awesome. Well, the grandmothers are happy to be an organization as part of this treaty. So thank you so much for your work and starting this and the vision of change starting from the bottom up, which brings me to our convergence that that we do at Climate Healers every 3 months called VCOP. And that's how it came about. The name change, as opposed to just our convergence, was it's called the Vegan Convergence of the Peoples, because when you attend COP, you realize there's nothing much going on to actually change the world. And it's the peoples that have always changed the world. So thank you for being that for us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we have like five programs. One is just like collecting endorsements. The second is the city campaign. The city campaign has really taken off. The third is like menu change. Fourth is global climate talk. So we actually have UN Burp Server status. Dr. Salash Rao was very generous, always helping us with badges, getting more badges. So like we do go to the global climate talks. And then the fifth program is training. So with respect to the global climate talks, we feel it's still good to be there. I know the change is slow, but we are pushing hard for plant-based transition there. And I think it's important to have that voice. And yeah, we're going to go there again. And this year for the, or sorry, last year in 2023, for the first time ever, we produced this report called Safe and Just: Plant-Based Treaties, Vegan Donut Economic Approach to the Food Systems. So it's a really important report, 146 pages, and it looks at all the planetary boundaries. Climate is just one. There are nine planetary boundaries, and animal agriculture is breaching five of those and is negatively impacting the others. And then Kate Raworth, she wrote a book called Donut Economics in 2017. And so we use that as a framework. So the donut is the the green part of the donut is the safe and just area. The outer part is the planetary boundaries, and then the inner part is the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So what we did is we put plant-based transition on the inner part. We focus on the food system, what needs to happen for us to have a safe and just green zone.
That's perfect. And we do know that animal agriculture has breached probably all of them, actually, probably all the planetary boundaries, because the ones that are not completely breached yet are on their way quite substantially. And I think that once they hit the tipping point, they'll cross over right away. So everything from land use to the water use to, in general, ecosystem loss. And yeah.
Yeah, ocean, like officially six of the nine boundaries have been breached. Two of them on their way, like ocean acidification is on its way and aerosol loading. Only one of them is heading in the right direction, which is the stratospheric ozone layer. But all the others are like six of them have been breached. Like it's really concerning. So we have a donut. I can show you. We have a flyer that's a donut. But yeah, so it shows, see the nine are breached. You see at the bottom, ocean acidification is heading there. And so,
I'm surprised it's not there yet. When we see the bleaching and the stuff that's going on in the ocean, I don't know who's coming up with those numbers. When I found the ocean acidification level wasn't breached yet, how bad does it have to get? That's my
I
question.
know. I think it, yeah, good point. It's maybe it's not in the red zone. They're thinking it's in the orange zone. I don't, good question. I don't know the answer to that.
It sure seems like it's a critical issue when you see what's going on in the oceans. And I think that a lot of oceanographers and environmentalists would completely disagree that it's not in the red zone. So it's interesting. But plant-based treaty is doing a lot of great work. Would you speak a little bit about that and then maybe go on to s give us some good news?
Yeah, like I can give you like I don't know. I mean, the plant-based treaties, the big achievements are just like getting the city campaign going. And some recent endorsements include three capital cities in Europe. So we got Edinburgh, the capital of Scotland, endorsed last year. This year they passed an action plan to implement. So they actually did an impact assessment of the whole treaty. So we have three R's, like don't make the problem worse, relinquish, redirect economic and political policies, and three is restore, reforestation. Within that, we have like 40 detailed proposals. So they did an impact assessment that took about half a year of all 40 proposals and looked at whether it was within their scope to do something. So they did a really great job. And so this year, in January, they passed implementation action plan. So they're doing a bunch of things, including they're going to meet with Greener by Default and Better Food Foundation on solutions like that. And Amsterdam this year also endorsed another capital. And they're doing like Vegan Fridays. They're having vegan options in all their public institutions, and they're going to set a target for plant-based versus animal protein by 2030. And then a third capital that endorsed was just a few weeks ago is Belfast. So that was nice. So three European capitals. So that's good news, and that's good. But I don't want to sort of say, oh, things are going well, because they're not. I mean, as Dr. Salish Rao po points out, the decimation of wildlife, the smaller and smaller percentage of wildlife on this planet being replaced by exploited farmed animals that are bred. And all the forest that's being converted for animal ag. So the big that animal land use is the number one issue, and animal agriculture is expanding as we speak, and we really need to have a U-turn on that. So, and there are companies like Cargill that work with nonprofits like Hatching Hope. It's a U.S. Christian organization that's spreading animal agriculture around the world, and they cooperate on a program called Hatching Hope, and they even take donations. And this is a company that's the richest sort of family in the US in terms of private company, have the most billionaires, and they take donations on Hatching Hope. And what their goal is to have 100 million people in Asia to do backyard chicken operations. So it's an AstroTurf organization. It appears like, oh, they're grassroots. Oh, they're working with self-help groups and women's empowerment. It's their way of getting in. creating slaughterhouses all over the place where what used to be mainly plant-based societies, hurting people's health, having so many animals exploited and suffering, and just devastating the environment. So this is the context that we live in. So how do we, it's a David and Goliath battle. So how do we, have a U-turn so that the Titanic doesn't crash into the iceberg? So we literally need to, change the course. So my view of optimism is like we is we need to do a lot of community organizing. We need to raise awareness, and we all need to come together because it's in all of our interests to have a healthy, ethical, sustainable planet.
So I guess the good news is that we're talking about it a lot more. It's as my daughter said once when I was kind of talking about animal agriculture again, and she's not vegan. She said, "Mom, do you think we don't know? It's all over the place. If we're not doing it, it's because we're choosing not to." And that's it. That's people know what's going on, whether they want to live in denial or not. People, to some degree, not every person, but if you people want to see what's going on, they can see what's going on. And then it's healing that desensitization that somehow we need to do this. It's reconnecting with that child that wouldn't be able to take an axe out and kill their pet goat. It just wouldn't happen. So, and there's a lot more vegans than there's ever been, and vegan food is a lot more accessible. So you're right. We're up against these absolutely massive corporations that don't have our best interest. And so it's the peoples that are coming together and having these conversations. So thank you, Anita.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there are more vegans in some pockets of the world, but globally, Cargill is working faster than we are in terms of converting people to meat eating. So there,
Wow.
so just I just want to throw that picture because that's what we found in the Face Safe and Just report. I'll just show you.
Wow.
Per capita meat consumption globally has gone up from 30 kilograms per person in 1980 to 45 kilograms per person in the early 20s. So it's gone up by 50%. Between 1980 and the 2020s.
Wow.
So that's it literally is a David and Goliath battle. Literally. So this is the Safe and Just report. Like I encourage everyone to go to plantbasedtreaty.org and you can download it, our Safe and Just report. And you'll get the picture. And then what are the solutions? Like the solutions are very strong. Like we need to ban live export. And you're struggling with that in the prairies where they're exporting live horse like horses to Japan for consumption. So we're fighting that right in Canada. There's ships that ship like goats, sheep, cows. So they grow them in like Portugal and other countries in Europe, and then they ship them to places that are suffering climate emergencies that don't have water. So they're going to oases which still have water and exploiting that, and then shipping them to like the Middle East. So it's utter insanity. Instead of listening and saying, oh, there's a climate emergency, there's a water crisis, let's not eat meat. Instead of that, they say, oh, let's go to places that still have water and breed animals and then ship them to these places. Like, do you see, like, people are not listening to the messages, to the signals. So it's very strong. When you look at the plant-based treaty, our calls to action are very strong, like ban live export. It's about respect indigenous rights. Indigenous people are on the front lines defending the Amazon. There's more people killed in fighting for land than any other sector, more than mining. So that's what we found. And then we say things like honest labeling, finance plant-based systems. Like we have very strong calls to action in order to, we know the answers. We know the solutions, just like you said, you and your daughter said, like the answers are there. It's just there's a lot of noise created by companies like Cargill and others that, meat industry associations that try to confuse people with ads and proper greenwashing. So that's what we're up against. So that's why we got to get the truth out. But the truth won't is not enough. We need to organize.
Yeah, the truth won't set us free until we actually change, for sure. So Anita, thank you for this information and letting people know where they can find more information and join and endorse. And what do you do for self-care as you're working through this stuff?
I think the biggest thing for self-care is like you don't work alone, you work as a community. So community, having community is for any social movement is very important. So when we do actions, we often do community things. So I'll give you an example. Like one of the things I enjoy a lot is every Thursday we have plant-based treaty organizing meetings, but first we have a potluck. And we have it at Wishbone Animal Rights Lab. Every Thursday, 5 to 8, we all get together and have a beautiful potluck. And we have an organizing meeting. Like that's fun. And so that's what I'd recommend is just like mix your social movement activism with community stuff. I also enjoy walking. I enjoy spending time in nature with I have a couple of dog companions that I absolutely adore. So I do things like that. I love walking. I love being part of nature. That kind of thing. And I love being part of community, communities that are making a change. I love spending time with people that care. And that are organizing, like activists, are my favorite people besides non-human animals, who are my favorite people.
Well, the people in our community become our family, the only family we can truly relate with, the ones that we feel the closest with. And I really, really appreciate you saying, getting onto the earth, getting onto Mother Earth. It just warmed up enough here to start walking bare feet. And I can't even believe, I'm always shocked at how much more energy I have and how my joy factor goes up and how my inflammation decreases just being barefoot on her.
That's beautiful.
And my first day of walking barefoot on Mother Earth on Thursday, I had these words run through me. So I think I'll end with this poem. I was asked by a vegan friend of mine who has the Vegan Posse podcast. She's lovely, Chrissy, as she's also a lawyer. And she was talking on our last circle with Dr. Will Tuttle. He has a compassion circle every second Thursday. And the World Peace Diet compassion circle. And she said, I'm just really exploring self-love. It might be her next book. And I was thinking about how conceptual self-love is. And I was thinking about growing up in the Canadian Shield in the middle of the bush as a child and what that did for me. In many of us were raised maybe in homes that weren't necessarily supportive. Maybe there was lots of flesh on our plates, and maybe there was, like me, there was a moose hung in the garage as it was after it was killed until it was completely whatever they were doing with it. No blame. So this is called Mother Earth, a self to love. I have a distant memory of a non-conceptual self-love, a non-thought form love of self, a freedom, if you will, an inner compass of care. When the crazy emotions were overkill, I knew Mother Earth awaited at my door. And I stepped into her, onto her, upon her, and I was taken in. All crazy evaporated from my flesh, my aura, my eyes, from that human pain indoors, inside the domain they called my home. I picked buttercups and clover and rolled over greener grass. I climbed trees and hid like a bird without a word. She held me deep inside her pulse. I played in the river. She washed me. I danced my fingers through the pollywogs. She transformed them into hopping beings, so I hopped with them. She taught me how to forage wild blueberry and red clover. Then I found a feather friend to play Red Rover, calling crow over. They said I had a good imagination. I called it my mother nation, a great exhalation in a world gone mad.
That's
Thank you.
beautiful.
Thank you
Those
for listening.
words out.
Yeah, I wrote that last Thursday, my first day of barefoot walking.
Oh, that's so nice.
It writes through me, as many writers say.
Oh,
So
so
thank you.
beautiful.
Thank you.
You have
Namaste.
crows. Crows. I love crows.
I have really good crow call, but I've tried to share my crow call over Zoom and it doesn't. It cuts it out because it's a certain frequency. So when we see each other in person, I will give you my crow call. I guess people think it's a real crow.
That's wonderful.
How I used to call my grandchildren and they knew it was me. So it's
Thank
great. Thank you very much.
you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.